Here's Jack Patty.
Good morning. Welcome into the 9 to 10 show for this Friday, the 7th of February, a forensic Friday, which means Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is with us, and the state Commonwealth Attorneys Association is meeting here in Lexington. Ray, you guys meet a couple times a year?
We meet in the summertime, and that's a far bigger conference. We're required to get continuing legal education credits by the Kentucky Bar Association, and making it mandatory that we get those credits has vastly improved the attendance.
I bet.
At these meetings. The winter meeting is less, there are fewer of us here, but it's important.
How many Commonwealth attorneys are there?
57.
And how many of those are men? 56.
I'd say we have, no. I bet you we have
10.
Five,
we have two, five.
I bet five or six women.
Why is it so largely dominated by men, do you think? And is it across the country or not?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like everything else, Jack. When I went to law school, there were two women in a class of about 130. Now, they're by percentage more women in the law school class than men. So
they, as the years go by, there are going to be more and more Commonwealth attorneys that are female.
Yeah.
By the way, we're brought to you by, let me do this quick, Landscapers Corner, 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Largest selection of natural stone in our area. Call them at 225-9433. And our guests are no strangers, but introduce them anyway.
All right. Well, Chris Coron is the Commonwealth's attorney, or Chris the DA, from Bowling Green. That's the 8th Judicial Circuit. And he's been a guest on this show a number of times. And he's a freak. He's about 6'6". And anybody that's over 6 feet tall to you and me is a freak.
Has all his hair.
Yeah. Well.
Most of his hair.
Less and less.
Yeah, less and less. He's got the Al Gore see-through look.
Yeah. Wouldn't we love to have that, though?
Yes. Yes. Well, the guy that does have hair is our other guest, and that's Rob Sanders, and he's the Commonwealth attorney in Covington. These are two leaders in the Commonwealth Attorneys Association and our outstanding prosecutors and represent prosecutors very well all over the state, but primarily within their jurisdictions. Welcome, men.
Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having me.
May I start off with a question?
Sure.
And I'm going to ask you the same one, but we'll start down with Chris. Chris, what is how many years you've been as a Commonwealth attorney?
I was elected in 2003.
Okay. What is the most satisfying, not the most high, you know, visible or whatever, high profile, but the most satisfying case that you prosecuted in your career as Commonwealth attorney? Which one jumps out? Any of them?
You know, actually early on in my career, had a child rape case where a young lady was raped by her biological father. Horrific case. Day before trial, doing prep with the young lady, and she was a train wreck. I really didn't think she would be able to testify, but I actually got up on the stand and for 2 hours testified about the horrific events. And the defendant thankfully got multiple life sentences. As great as that was, probably the best part, years later I ran into her and walked up. She gave me a big hug and looked at me and goes, "I'm okay." And, you know, we see people at their worst and at their best, and it's nice to see people come out the other side from the criminal justice system.
Nice. That's nice, Chris. All right, Rick. Rob, the most satisfying case you've prosecuted.
Well, I got to agree with Chris. It's tough to top the child victim cases, and that's where I started my prosecuting career, is doing nothing but the child victim cases. So those probably be all across the board my top most important cases I've done. But probably the last, I started 2 trials ago that I did, was one of the most significant outside of a child victim case, and it was where a Covington police officer was shot. Three of them were shot at, and we got a three attempted murder convictions, but it was especially important to me because it doesn't happen very often that the police, I mean, they have to fight people all the time. They have people doing all sorts of rotten things in the back of their police cruisers and stuff like that. But it's not very often that a police officer actually gets shot. So that fellow was convicted, and the jury recommended a 60-year sentence. Really a satisfying win.
Nice. How about you, Ray?
Well, I have to agree with Chris and Rob, but in the kids' cases, they're always afraid to come forward in sexual abuse cases because they're afraid nobody will believe them. And one thing that happens is when prosecutors and victims' advocates believe these kids, that begins the healing because somebody needs to believe them. Now, the outcome of the case isn't nearly as important to them as that somebody said, we believe you, let's see what we can do about it. Mm-hmm. And once that happens, it's... But the satisfaction is always with victims. And not with these thugs that decide they want to commit crimes, that's their choice. Victims are involuntary participants in the whole process. They don't want to be there. They right. didn't ask to be there. But if what we can do is help them through, which is what we all do, then it's a real plus. I don't spend a lot of time worrying about people that choose to commit crimes.
Yeah.
And when you see the kids grow up, and they come up to you, and we've all had this happen, you don't recognize them because they're now adults, and they look at you and go, you're the only person that ever believed me.
Really, that's really something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've learned through the number of years of doing this program with you, Ray, and I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of prosecutors all over the country. It's very personal. It surprised me because I figured this job would be a job and one that you can't get too personally connected to because it'd drive you nuts. But the prosecutors that I've met through you and through the show take this real personally.
Well,
it's more than a job.
It's a calling, yeah, frankly. Yeah. Once you get, you know, sometimes you run for the office, but it doesn't take you long to realize that this is not a job, that this is a calling.
Certainly not for the money, I can assure you that.
Right, you could all make more money on the other side. Last week, we talked so much about heroin and what a big problem it's become all over the country and in our state, and talked about the dealers. If I sell Ray some heroin and you put it in your arm and you die, am I responsible for your death or are you responsible for your death? And it's a question that we talked about on the program last week. And then a day or two later, we learn of a high-profile an actor that did exactly that. He bought heroin. He died and with a needle still stuck in his arm. And as I understand it, three people have been arrested and they're looking for a fourth. And so we sort of had a prophetic case last week that we didn't really know that we did at the time, right?
Well, that's right. And I want the impressions and opinions of Chris and Rob on this thing because no matter... It's a shame that people weren't paying much attention to this until somebody famous dies as a result of an overdose. So what happens is that they, you know, when he dies, everybody wants to look at who's responsible. Well, number one, Philip Seymour Hoffman is responsible for his own death, but who has facilitated that and who can be responsible for basically facilitating him? And that's the dealers, the people that sell this poison. And so talk to us a little bit, Chris and Rob, about so this case lands in your lap. Let's just assume that the Philip Seymour Hoffman case lands in Bowling Green and Covington, both. What kind of issues are we now facing so they get real fired up and go grab three or four people?
The biggest problem right now under Kentucky law as far as prosecuting for a homicide charge, we really don't have that ability. Right now, to try and make that type of case, we've got to have the assistance of the United States Attorney's Office, and thankfully both Kerry Harvey's office in the Eastern District and David Hale's office in the Western District have been proactive in looking at these cases. Senate Bill 5, which is before our legislature right now, is kind of an omnibus heroin bill, and Rob will touch on it. It took people dying left and right from Louisville to Northern Kentucky for an interest to be finally shown in the heroin epidemic. Senate Bill 5's got some issues that we're going to have to deal with. Ray's touched on it. There's a new United States Supreme Court case that's come out on causation, which means you've got to directly connect the drug that the individual took that caused their death to that person.
And that's not easy to do, is it?
No, and I mean, the Hoffman case, from what's been reported, in his apartment were multiple units of heroin in different packaging. So how do you track which one killed him and who provided that drug?
And if you can't, you can't make the case. This whole heroin thing, we got a hint that this was coming from Northern Kentucky. Rob, this is nothing new to you.
No, we've been talking about, I think I've actually talked on this show about this probably for the last 2 years, that heroin's coming, that it's coming down I-75, and then it was headed for Lexington, and that was very prophetic, came exactly true. And from Lexington, now it's headed down the Mountain Parkway, and it's getting to more and more rural parts of the state where it's even more dangerous than it is in Northern Kentucky, because we're very fortunate. We have fire departments and ambulances probably within 5 minutes of almost every house in Kenton County. Well, you start getting down in the mountains and out in the more rural counties in Kentucky where an ambulance is 20, 30 minutes away. Well, that's
those
way
people
too
are
late.
People are going to die, aren't they?
That's right. We've, you know, put it in perspective, we probably have a potential Philip Seymour Hoffman case in Kenton County darn near every day of the week. We have an overdose death almost every day of the week.
Is that
right? That's right. And so, you know, think about how many potential murder cases that is.
We're going to take a break. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. We are back, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us. Rob Bartley from Covington, and Chris Coron.
You blew it again. Yeah. Rob Sanders.
Man, am I blowing it today. Rob Sanders. Where did I get Bartley?
Rick Bartley. A friend that you've also had on the show.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah, Rick's from Pikeville.
That's what I'm thinking. Okay, well, I feel better about it. Anyway, sorry about that, Rob. Rob Sanders is with us from Covington, and Chris Coron from Bowling Green. And we're talking about the situation with heroin, which I guess came as a result of us doing such a good job clamping down on these prescription drug abusers. This is Dan. Good morning, Dan.
Hey, guys. I heard you guys talking about this heroin all coming down 75. Where is it coming into the U.S. from, though? Because my understanding is, and I'm sort of a student of this topic, and illegal immigration in particular, that a lot of this is coming up through Mexico with the illegal, since the southern border is porous, since we know Obama, you know, wants to flood our country with illegal.
And I think that's a political comment there.
No.
Yeah. Go on. We were just talking about that in the break. Rob, address that.
Well, I think he's right. It is coming in through Mexico, or at least the vast majority of the heroin's coming in through Mexico. It was coming into bigger cities like Detroit and coming down 75 to Cincinnati. And then, of course, I'm right across the river from Cincinnati, so we get all of their problems. But now I think the Mexicans are starting to cut out the middlemen. We've gotten cases in Northern Kentucky where actual Mexican cartel members are setting up shop, doing business themselves, and dealing right there in Northern Kentucky. So I think, like any other business, they're looking to reduce the number of employees in the chain so they can make the most profits they can. But I think our caller's right. It's most of it is coming from Mexico.
Yeah, and I think one thing, too, I've got a friend of mine on the sheriff's department, and he's told me, and I'm just from experience, I grew up over in Metathorpe, and I went to school with a bunch of kids from Cardinal Valley, And as I understand it now, Cardinal Valley has basically been overrun by the illegals, and there's actually about seven gangs that operate in the Cardinal Valley, Alexandria Drive, Brazil's Road corridor. And I'm sure Ray's on top of that. But it just seems like so many of our problems are just coming from the failure of our federal government to protect the citizens of the United States.
Can you comment on that, Ray?
Of course, I agree.
Yeah.
But as far as the
gangs in Cardinal Valley?
Well, I don't know how many, but there are gang members in this community. And we've got Latin Kings and a number of the Hispanic gangs. But we got white gangs and we got black gangs. We got gangs in this town. And at some point, we'll have the police that work with gangs come in on the show and talk to us about that. But, you know, right now I just kind of want to talk about how this heroin issue is everybody seems to be climbing on board at our little meeting after our...
Thank you, Dan.
After our session was finished yesterday, this House Bill 463 that I bellyache about all the time it didn't decriminalize heroin and the rest of the drugs, but it certainly made punishment unique and hard to get.
Well, they reduced the punishment for possession of any kind of illicit drugs, the hardest of hard drugs, including heroin. They reduced it down to 1 to 3 years. You start factoring in parole eligibility and good time reductions in sentences, and next thing you know, a maximum 3-year sentence, which you can't get without going to a jury trial and convincing a jury to max them out, but nobody's going to plead guilty and willingly takes the maximum sentence. But even if they did, the good time reduces that sentence so much to it's a little more than a year in jail.
Wow. Okay, Brack, and then we'll take a break. Brack, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, a couple years ago, you had an assistant attorney general from either Colorado or Arizona on your show.
Uh-huh.
And do you remember that he said that the Mexican mafia was in Lexington, Kentucky? That's what he called it, the Mexican mafia. It's a drug cartel. He said they're extraordinarily dangerous. I have never heard you guys follow up on that. I've never heard Ray mention it again, but I made a note of it when he said that because I thought it was extraordinary. I've just had a follow up. I'd like for him to follow up on that issue. And then when the fellow just now said that there's seven gangs in Cardinal Valley. Well, if we know there's seven drug gangs over there, why are they still there? Why haven't the police shut them down? And then on the gun issue with the heroin, I understand why they're charging them. They're charging the seller of the heroin with homicide. So I'm wondering, do you do this routinely with sellers of guns who sell a gun to somebody that murder somebody? And has that issue been raised by the defense?
All right, we're gonna take a break, get an update from the Information Center, get comments when we come back. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877. And we are back. Ray, going into the break, we had multiple questions from one of our listeners, to just give you an opportunity to respond to any of that.
Well, he wanted the question that he asked that I think we need to respond to is, why don't we prosecute the people that sell guns? And Chris, when we went off the air, is everybody, maybe you said, but everybody that calls seems to forget that you got to be able to prove it.
All right.
And we frequently, with guns, somebody buys it on the street from somebody whose nickname was Billy Bob or Buster or...
Right.
Then we have no clue about that. Then we can't prove it. So what we have to... But if it's a stolen gun, then we can charge somebody with receiving stolen property.
What about this Mexican mafia business? You know what he's talking about?
Well, once again, you still have the proof issue, Jack. I mean, the fact that somebody's a member of a gang is not, as far as I know, is not illegal. It's only when they become involved in illegal activities, and if the police can arrest someone that's involved in illegal activity that's also a gang member, then we get into that proof part.
All right, David, good morning.
Good morning. I had a nephew that was he had two tours in Afghanistan. He came back fine the first time. Second time he came back, he was addicted to heroin. And dishonorable discharge, and he overdosed twice. I'm just wondering how many veterans are out there trying to self-medicate to alleviate all this stuff. And if you do arrest somebody that happens to be a veteran, is there, do you do anything to maybe help those guys find some direction?
The veterans.
I know you're a prosecutor, and I understand that, but I don't know if they have any programs for veterans or not.
We have a veterans court here in Lexington.
Well, there are some veterans courts, I think one in Louisville, one in Lexington and Kentucky, but veterans are also very fortunate in the sense that they have the VA hospitals around that do provide drug treatment and substance abuse treatment. That's an option that a lot of the addicts just don't have. And I think what he mentions about soldiers coming back addicted, that Afghanistan's probably still one of the biggest producers of the opiates in the world, and that's probably one of the dirty little secrets about the war in Afghanistan, is that there were drugs coming back because of that war, that whether it be through the military or contractors or just people smuggling in on flights or what have you, but the war in Afghanistan was giving us a lot of heroin for a while. Now that the troops are withdrawing from there and we're downsizing our involvement in Afghanistan, it's only creating more of a market for Mexican heroin, because there's that demand still there, and so the Mexicans are filling it.
That's one of the things that the government does not want to talk about.
Yeah,
is the issue of, as the caller has mentioned, is addicted soldiers coming back, and that's a big issue.
Chris, you were nodding your head. You have some experience with that.
We unfortunately see it a lot, and a lot of our friends in law enforcement are also veterans and served overseas in combat, and unfortunately you're seeing domestic violence rates off the charts with returning veterans, a lot of the substance abuse issues coming back with our veterans, and you know, we put these guys through multiple combat tours, and all of a sudden they're dropped back into society here, and it's a struggle. I think the Veterans Court is a great step. I know prosecutors across the state, without question, want to work with our returning veterans and make sure that they're getting the assistance they need in terribly tragic situations.
I appreciate your call, David. This is Derek. Good morning, Derek.
Yeah, I'd like to ask your guest, Ray in particular, has anything like that happened down in Texas ever happened here in Kentucky with the Michael Morton case? And I'm sure that you guys are familiar with that case. He spent 25 years in prison for a crime that he did not commit. And the prosecutor in the case, some clown by the name of Ken Anderson, who later got a judgeship, withheld evidence in the case that proved his innocence. Have you guys ever heard of anything like that happening here in Kentucky?
Right.
Well, there've been a couple of people, I think at least one in Louisville, that where the guy was, I guess, exonerated. Now, I don't know about withholding evidence.
No, in fact, that was a DNA exoneration, I believe, and the Commonwealth attorney at the time was Dave Stengel, who actually was the one that stood up and made the motion to get the guy out of jail.
Is that right?
He agreed to the DNA testing and then took the steps to get the man out of jail and ultimately dismissed the case. I think that, sure, we can't rule out wrongful convictions anywhere, but I don't think that one notorious case. The one we hear about all the time now is the Duke lacrosse case. We hate those cases because it only takes one high-profile case like that to make problems for us in every single case we take to trial. Every defense attorney, you know, on the civil side, they're talking about McDonald's spilling hot coffee cases. Mm-hmm. And now on the criminal side, the defense attorneys are talking about the Duke lacrosse case. We hate those. We don't like the prosecutors that do stuff like that any more than anybody else. But there's tens, if not hundreds of thousands of prosecutors across this country, and it only takes one bad apple like that to make trouble for the lot of us. But I think 99.9% are honest and hardworking and would never want to see anything like that happen.
All right, Derek, I appreciate your call. This is Michael. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, thanks.
Okay, I just turned on the radio, got in my car, and this is a very important topic to me. Recently, I was dating a girl and found out she was living a double life and was a heroin addict.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, my eyes have been opened up to a world I didn't know was anywhere near as bad as it is in Lexington, and I've tried to help her sister through it. It's an epidemic in this town, especially for girls in their 20s.
We don't hear about girls as much as boys or men. So it is a big problem with women, huh?
It's almost every girl somewhere between 20 and 24 seems to be have some kind of problem with this or with pills before they became really expensive. And it's like when the pills became really expensive, they all started going to heroin. But the thing I'm wondering is, yeah, you take on the dealers, but they'll find a new source for it. What's the answer to help get them through it? Because they all want to get away from it, but it takes over and they can't.
The biggest thing I've seen, psychological counseling, believe it or not, there's a reason that they're turning to heroin. They're looking to escape something in reality, in their real life, that is hurting them mentally. And so the drug treatment's only part of it. Drug treatment without psychological treatment, in my opinion, doesn't do much good, because most people, until they cure whatever it is that's driving them towards drugs in the first place, they're just going to end up going back to the drug.
And I can't tell you how many times I've talked to people that have gone through our drug court program. One thing that, unfortunately, over the last few years, with the lessening of some of the penalties, without question, we look at people many times, they'll look at us and go, I finally realized I hated jail more than I liked getting high. And without that stick out there so many times, it's causing more problems than it's curing.
Taking a break, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. Rob Sanders is with us.
Hey.
How'd I do?
Did well. Better.
Like Chris Poron is also here, and Ray Larson. And this is John. I realized, by the way, why I screwed that up, because that's what you said when you texted me yesterday, Ray. This is John. Good morning, John.
Good morning, gentlemen. Change the subject a little bit, talk about something you talked about there in the beginning about prosecuting the child abusers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you may remember a few years ago, there were a couple of teachers in the 70s who had abused a girl who came forward, and they ended up arresting them, sending them to jail. At the time that story was out, a neighbor of mine just kind of said, you know, we were watching the news, she said, you know, she wished she'd grown up in Kentucky. And she confided in me that she was abused from when she was about 8 years old until 13 or 14 by a stepfather who ended up going to jail for trying to kill her mother. But when she was about 30, she found out he was out. And he was in a house with another young child. So she came forward, and she had a card that she'd saved all those years that pretty much he said what he had done to her. She went to the prosecutor in her state, and I'm really not sure what it was. I mean, she grew up in Pennsylvania, New York, and, you know, I was just trying to be a good listener at the time. But he told her that, you know, he believed her, but there was nothing he could do because she had 7 years from when she turned 18 to come forward. And I just wondering if you could explain how that statute of limitation works. Is that a state-to-state thing? And if so, is there a way to make it federal where, you know, come forward at any time?
One thing Kentucky law does well is on a felony offense, there is no statute of limitations. It is a state-by-state decision, as well as the federal government has a different standard. But in Kentucky, I know all of us have had cold cases, as well as extensive delayed report cases from years past, and we've been able to proceed forward and prosecute those individuals.
So if 20 years later, that case that the caller's talking about would have been prosecuted in Kentucky. Right.
Absolutely.
Because we don't have a statute of limitation.
Thank you, John. You had another drug that you wanted to mention that I'm unfamiliar with.
Something called, well, there are two of them I want to talk about. One is fentanyl, and then the other one is Narcan.
Narcan.
Yeah. Fentanyl is, I was told by a neurologist friend of mine that people are mixing fentanyl with heroin. And it's a very powerful, whatever kind of drug it is. And it will, just a small amount will stop your body from working. And
is that on the street?
Unfortunately, fentanyl is used as an anesthesia by many surgeons, like any drug, if it's misused. But the problem with it is it is such a sensitive drug that people on the street don't know how to use it, and the overdose rate on it is just off the charts because it's so deadly. I mean, it'll stop your breathing almost instantly if misused.
The other thing is drug dealers are stamping their own fentanyl pills, kind of like you've seen with ecstasy, where it comes out and it could be shaped like anything from a Flintstones vitamin to...
Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, Ninja. It seems like ecstasy always had some sort of kids theme to it. Well, they're starting to do the same thing with fentanyl. The last update I saw is they were stamping it to look like a pill that looked like the Facebook logo, only it was fentanyl. And these things, that's really the problem with any illicit drug, is you never know what it's mixed with. And we've seen that in when the drug lab reports come back in ecstasy cases. Ecstasy might have cocaine in it, it might have fentanyl in it, it might have methamphetamine in it. You just never know. And it's the same way, you know, heroin dealers looking to get a better high out of their heroin so that their customers come back to them. They'll put fentanyl in the heroin, or they'll just sell fentanyl straight out. Either way, it's incredibly deadly.
And what's the other?
Narcan is a drug that our fire department says that they use about two times a day, and it reverses the effects of opiate-based drugs.
It blocks the opiate receptors and can instantaneously bring somebody out of an overdose. They did a pilot project in a small community in Massachusetts where they had over 200 overdose deaths in a year. First responders were able to administer it. It's kind of like an EpiPen for people that have allergies. And if timely given, it'll bring somebody out of an overdose. I think the legislature is going to, during this session, give the local option for communities to not only have first responders carry Narcan, but give an immunity provision for the use of it.
I got a Facebook response to our program from Mark. Says, I'm listening to a great topic today. I was wondering if you could check out www.netdevice.net. Have you guys heard of neuroelectric therapy or neuroelectric therapy for it says it's a device, transcranial electrical stimulation for rapid detox. Does that mean anything to you guys at all?
Sounds like shock therapy.
Shock, it sure does. Doesn't it? Okay. This is David. Good morning, David.
Hey, Jack. You know, I've got a suggestion. Did I hear one of the prosecutors just mention that if you take that, you know, the overdose rate on the one drug that the surgeons use is just, and you know, it'll stop your heart like that, I think he said. Why don't we pass that along to the Department of Corrections so that when it comes time to, you know, put people, you know, to execute people, that they have something like this that, you know, I've never understood why we've got to have two things to back up this. It's so painful. Sounds like when these unfortunate addicts die, it's a very peaceful death, and sounds like what you just mentioned can probably be shipped right over to them, and we could take care of a lot of this, you know. Oh, it was so painful. He looked like he was this seems like it might be a, you know, a nice simple solution for that. And I hate to say it, but I think we need to get you know, a little more stricter on some of our punishments, and this may be a, you know, humane way to do it.
You are so preaching to the choir, young
yeah,
man.
Yeah, everybody's well, we'll probably invite Philip Shepard, who's the circuit judge in Frankfurt, over to listen to some of this.
Yeah, it's. I've wanted the same thing. Why are we having this debate over what kind of drug we're using when our police departments have plenty of heroin sitting in their evidence rooms? We could put that to good use, and it would they'd go out happy and pain free.
And the methodology with the death penalty is not the issue. It's judicial and legislative delay of implementing the death penalty.
Thank you guys for being with us. Very much. Hope you have a good conference.
Thank you.
And come back. Thank you, Ray. See you next week.